A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Are legendary. Their origins are unknown. Their methods are extreme. But when our future's at stake, they'll be the world's last hope.
And the game is on.
LXG, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Hello and welcome to another Smirchside special. This week we'll be saying hello to the 20th century with one of the worst films of the 21st. There'll be adventure, epic dialogue and heart-hitting action. And that was just the people leaving the screening. And he was on a plane. Anyway, yes, it's the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And joining me to put together the worst group of people since the Broadmoor Battle of the Bands contest is Ed Byrne.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, how are you?
Well, you made me watch a terrible film.
Yeah, sorry about that.
It wasn't even good enough. It wasn't even bad enough to be fun.
No.
It was just not good. Uh-huh. I mean, sometimes you can watch a terrible film and it's a laugh how bad it is. This is just a bit rubbish.
I think you enjoy it more when you remember that Sean Connery is hating every second of being in this.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that kind of got me about it, though.
Yeah.
I know Sean Connery was not a perfect man, but he was a very good actor.
Mm.
And you're watching it and you know, because it was famously the film that retired him.
Yeah.
He hated it so badly. Mm. He hated it so much, he just went, that's it. I'm done. I am never making another film.
Mm.
And that's quite something. That's quite a feather to have in your cap, I think, as a director, the man who made Sean Connery hate acting.
Yeah.
And even knowing that he's just going through it for contractual reasons, that he can't just walk off, he still is quite good in it. Like, it's kind of sad because, like, the very first scene, maybe the very first scene he's in, maybe his heart's still in it at that point. Maybe this is obviously before him and the director really fell out.
Yeah.
And you can just kind of see there's absolutely life in the old dog at this point. There's no reason why he couldn't have gone on to make a bunch more average and below average films.
Yeah, he could have done that easily because he had that sort of like, what's it called? Like a life preserver of natural charm that floated him through things. But in this, I think, even that isn't enough. And he just looks so miserable. He looks like a dog that needs to be put down in a lot of this. It's quite sad.
And there's a scene in particular, I don't know if you want to go through everything chronologically, but just while we're on the subject, where there's supposed to be like a touching moment between him and Tom Sawyer, who's a gunslinger now. He's teaching him to shoot, and Tom Sawyer goes, "Did you teach your son to do this?" And then Sean Connery just disappears.
Yeah.
And it's just a door just closes, and you just go, "He just wasn't even there for this scene."
No, definitely.
Or they decided to reshoot it. They decided they need an emotional moment, whatever it is. And by then, his contract had expired, and he didn't have to show up. It was so obviously a scene that was just assembled around the fact that Sean Connery was not available.
That's right.
And it was just like, why did they even bother?
Mm.
It was like the scene that they put in with Oliver Reed after he died in Gladiator.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, where they digitized his face and he just says something like, rrr.
Yeah, he just hands him a key, basically, yeah.
I'm dead.
Avenge me.
before we begin, though, we should mention you're doing a little sort of run-up to Edinburgh at the moment, aren't you, in Soho Theatre?
Yeah, I'm at Soho Theatre just at the moment, and then we'll be... I've got a couple more previews then dotted around London.
Mm.
And then, yeah, I'm off up to the Fringe. I start on the 3rd of August through to the 26th, maybe 27th, something like that.
How many Fringes is that now?
Oh, God, that's a very simple question. I should be able to just answer straight off the top of my head, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think this might be, for a one-man show, it might be 12. You know what? If you wait just a second, I can give you a full answer. Hang on.
Oh, okay. So this is the kind of detail you don't get on other podcasts. To make someone actually get up and go and get proof. You don't get that anywhere else.
Strangely enough, I just have it on a piece of paper here.
Uh-huh.
For one-man shows, yeah. I've done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. This is 14. This is my 14th one-man show at the Fringe.
It's not a mileage.
That is a lot of mileage, yeah.
Yeah, and I take it you still enjoy it?
I do, yeah, and I am looking forward to it. I'm looking forward. It's actually, it's a kind of, like, I live in the Essex countryside, and which is nice, but you have to drive everywhere or get on your bike. It's kind of like going on a city break, getting to live in a city for 3.5 weeks. It's kind of fun, and I'll be living with Glenn Wool, who is like one of my best friends, and I'm just doing an hour every night rather than, you know, on tour you're usually doing like an hour and a half. And you having to get out of bed and check out and go to a different hotel the next day. Mm. Whereas this, it's you're in the same place. And it's, you know, it's I'm quite looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, that's good. So
yeah, it's not the kind of Edinburgh readiness you expect from me. People tend to be quite miserable about Edinburgh.
They do.
People tend to, yeah.
That was why I asked, because most of the time I get, for fuck's sake, another...
Mm.
Yeah.
I was talking to a comic. I don't want to name her because... She might. It's not a big thing, but I just don't. It's not probably just not right to name her. But she'd had a great Edinburgh. Mm. She'd had a fantastic Fringe Festival. Like done two shows, both of which got nominated for awards, amazing reviews and all that. And I said, "Oh, you had a great Edinburgh, didn't you?" And she goes, "Yeah, but I just don't really enjoy the Fringe." And I'm like, "Well, don't ever go again. Just don't, because if you didn't enjoy that Fringe, the next one is never going to be as good as that one. So you are going to be just don't go." Like, I've had maybe two Fringes where I've really not enjoyed it.
Mm.
And that's because, you know, for whatever reason, the show I was doing wasn't great or, you know. But when it's good, it's great.
Oh, brilliant. Well, look for the internet for dates and places you can go and see Ed, I would.
EdBurn.com, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's on the internet, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, perfect.
But I'm not going to spell burn for you. I think that's going to be the initiative test.
Exactly.
If you can't pass that, if you're going, where is Ed Brine?
The penitent man will pass. but talking of the penitent
I get that reference. I get that reference.
See?
Yeah.
I made one person laugh. That's good.
That's The Last Crusade.
There you go. Are you excited about
which
the new
one? Which stars Sean Connery.
Yeah.
I would, but Crystal Skull, I didn't even get through Crystal Skull. Yeah. I literally watched it for about halfway and I was like, nah.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting, I know we're wandering off there. No, here's an interesting observation about the Indiana Jones movies. And it was made by a guy called Paul F. Tompkins, you know, the comedian, you know, Mr. Peanut Butter. Mm-hmm. He remarked on this on Twitter, and I don't know why more people haven't picked up on it, is that at the end of every one of the first three Indiana Jones films, Indiana Jones is shown irrefutable proof of the existence of God. I mean, he literally sees the power of the, in inverted commas, the Christian God in the first one, and then in whatever, Kalima, Shakti, what God is that supposed to be?
Yeah.
You know, he sees evidence of it.
Mm.
And then again, the Christian God in the third one. How is he still just an archaeologist and lecturer? How has he not become a monk?
Yeah.
How is he not a mad, swivel-eyed preacher? Mm. I have seen it. It is real. Repent. Surely.
Yeah, he would. Or he'd be trying to recreate it to kind of get some more money or something. Just say, come on, God, sort me out.
It would be a literally life-changing thing, and it's happened to him three times, and he just goes, I met God. He saved my life. Anyway, time to look for some more artifacts while I lecture students who don't give a shit. So it's like,
he met an alien as well.
In the fourth one. Apparently he did meet an alien, but I did mention I didn't get through that one.
He also met John Rhys Davies. That must have been a life-changing experience, based on his Question Time appearance.
Yes.
So 1899 then.
Yeah.
We're on the brink of the 20th century. And it says, the great nations of Europe share an uneasy peace. For hundreds of years, wars have been fought with the same weapons. I don't know if that's true, but okay.
I'm not sure how historically accurate that is, but fair enough. I think the point is that, you know, there's a change coming. Fair enough.
And a terrorist group led by the mysterious Phantom... break into the Bank of England and steal Leonardo da Vinci's blueprints of Venice, where they'd be kept, obviously, in the Bank of England.
That would be the good place.
Yeah, safest place. A policeman does that classic Austin Powers thing where he's standing in front of a tank going, and then gets run over.
I think that was a whole, almost like a parody of how Americans view the British police, just running around waving sticks whilst being completely outgunned by the bad guys.
Yeah, his little Bobby helmet got squished.
Mm-hmm.
I
mean, it starts reasonably all right.
Yeah.
The special effects aren't great. They're, you know, but it is. It's from how many years ago this
20 years ago.
Yeah, so, you know, it was all right. It started okay. A tank comes out and breaks into the Bank of England, and then some Zeppelins in Germany get blown up.
Yeah. Yeah, but so the British Empire send a guy called Sanderson Reed to go and recruit Alan Quatermain from Kenya.
Alan Quatermain and a bunch of other out of copyright characters.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that is it. It's the League of Out of Copyright Gentlemen.
It is, yeah. It's Alan Moore going, I'm going to make a load of characters out of people who are out of copyright, yeah. Because now you could have Winnie the Pooh in there, that'd be good.
Yeah. But you'll never be able to have Peter Pan.
No.
They've just changed the rules for that one.
That's right. It's a shame, because he'd be better than Tom Sawyer. Which we'll get to, but my God.
Yeah.
So he first meets David Hemmings, who's basically acting as a cover for Quatermain and pretending to be him.
Yeah, surrogate Quatermain, for people who want to come and have tales told. Now, because Alan Quatermain was... Because they did do a film with...
Richard Chamberlain. Yeah.
The King Solomon's Mines.
Yes.
And it was... It looked like a real rip-off of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
Whip in hand and everything. Mm-hmm. But then you go, but the character of Alan Quatermain predates Indiana Jones.
Yes.
So you could argue that Indiana Jones is a rip-off of Alan Quatermain.
Yes.
But it doesn't... It clearly, cinematically, it borrowed quite a lot from Indiana Jones, I would have thought.
Oh, yeah, even the theme and everything, yeah.
Mm. But it's interesting then that it would come sort of full circle that you then get the guy who played Indiana Jones' dad to then play Alan Quatermain. I don't know if that... Wait, had he played Indiana Jones? Yeah, of course.
Because this
was his last film. Yeah. So I thought that was a nice idea.
Yeah.
I don't know how deliberate that was.
And apparently Connery did this because he'd obviously famously turned down The Matrix and he turned down the part of Gandalf. So he thought, oh, a franchise, I'll do it because this is going to be very successful. Yeah, damn it.
Did he turn down The Matrix? What was it? Was that the Lawrence Fishburne role?
I think it was the Lawrence Fishburne role, yeah, I think so.
Can't be anything else, can it? Yeah.
No. He'd have been terrible as that.
Was this around the same time that Will Smith was turning down the Keanu Reeves role then?
I believe so. You could have been Keanu, it could have been Will Smith and Sean Connery.
Yeah, no, honestly, I think that might have been originally the plan, yeah.
Yeah. So he gets told there's going to be a world war. And to prove it, loads of guys in armour turn up with machine guns. And they kill David Hemmings immediately. Seems a bit rough.
Lucky escape for David Hemmings, I guess.
Yeah.
And then there's a gun battle, which is, you know, isn't bad. But you don't realise at this point, it's then revealed later, that Alan Quatermain can't die.
Yes, right. On African soil.
Yeah. Which kind of, I don't know, it slightly retrospectively removes any jeopardy from that gunfight, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
You kind of wonder why he was so worried.
Yeah, why he was diving. He could have just walked up to someone and just let them shoot him in the face.
Yeah.
And then ripped out their arsehole and eaten it.
Yeah. I guess he was just thinking of everybody else who was in that place.
Yeah.
Trying to protect them,
I suppose. Also avenging his dear friend Nigel, David Hemmings, who was a walking fire hazard with those eyebrows and those whiskers.
Mm. Here's the other thing, though. Sorry, I'm going back here. Because yeah, he's sitting there behind David Hemmings, who, as I say, he's going to regale people with tales of Alan Quatermain. Mm. And that's where he's got people like that, stooges, lookalikes, whatever, because he can't be arsed. Mm. But he's sitting right behind him.
Yeah.
Trying to read it. So he's still...
micro.
He's still having to... Yeah, he's still having to listen to it. That'd be worse.
Make sure you mention that giant cock, Nigel.
Yeah. It's like, don't tell him. Don't tell him till later that I can't die. It ruins the jeopardy.
You led with me not dying, Nigel. You've ruined it.
So what is the point? I mean, if you're going to be sitting there the whole time anyway, you may as well tell the fucking story.
Oh, it's so stupid. And this is the period as well, which is quite funny when you think back on it, where Alan Moore had everything adapted, and like Sean Connery, hated every second.
Hated all of it. Yeah. And I think because I did read The Watchmen.
Yeah.
But I didn't read League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
No.
And I imagine as a comic book, as a graphic novel, it probably works. Mm. It's a bit of gas. As a comic book, a lot of stuff works as comic books and then just doesn't work cinematically, you know. And yeah. I'm sure this, as something to just read, it's fine. You're not going to analyze it in the same way because you're not going to have spent the same amount of money on it. You don't look at it and think, my God, the budget on this comic book, in the way that you will watch this going, this is fucking ridiculous. You don't analyze the notion of Tom Sawyer being a gunslinger or Captain Nemo being a kick-ass martial artist. You just don't think about it.
No. But yeah, it's difficult. It's really difficult because the comic book's kind of, I think its whole thing was it being kind of steampunky and Victoriana and all that.
Yeah.
I think that's quite difficult to do with film, especially when it's so CG heavy, when again, it's that thing with CGs like, I'm not quite ready, stop using me so much.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's always, I mean, even with the whole thing with CGI, I always hate that when people like George Lucas are going, no, it's amazing what we can do. Mm. I was like, dude, it's not yet.
No.
I can take anything. I can now realise, no, you can't. Stop it.
I think people sometimes don't think how it's going to look in a couple of years. And it always looks bad. So he kills everybody. And then as he's leaving with the guy from the government, the big clubhouse blows up. And he's like, all right, I'm in.
Mm.
And then wistfully looks at a grave that says Quatermain. But we don't know about that yet.
Yeah.
So then he's brought to meet M, played by Richard Roxburgh. And then we meet Captain Nemo, as you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way he isn't Captain Birdseye like he usually is in films.
Oh, yes. They've cast him. Was Captain Nemo Indian
iteration? I don't know, I have no idea, because usually it's like James Mason with a white beard type man, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Every other version I've seen of him.
Yeah.
So I feel like I should have done a bit more literary research.
Same.
Before commenting.
Who can be fucking arse there?
Well, I know. Well, I think we should be approaching this like a blockbuster, because that's what it was supposed to be, and we should be looking at it the way the audience would look at it, going, is Captain Nemo Indian now? Okay, fair enough.
Fair enough. It makes sense.
Yeah, I think Captain Nemo was just given a bit too much. So he's basically his face from the A-Team.
Mm, yes.
In that, you know, he supplies everything.
Mm-hmm.
Whilst at the same time also being BA from the A-Team.
Yes.
In that he's the best fighter. And it just seems a little bit too much to put on one man's shoulders.
Yeah.
Who you basically just didn't give any dialogue to.
Yeah, and also you've got the other members of the team who don't really do much.
Yeah, who are really just fleshing it out.
Yeah.
And also, it's also this thing of, right, so the whole thing is that it's about an arms race, is that the Phantom is inventing these armaments that the world doesn't have in order to make the world buy armaments from him. But then Captain Nemo has got shit that's light years ahead of what the Phantom has. You're like, why doesn't Captain Nemo just make more shit and sell that at a knockdown price.
It's a very good point. I hadn't thought about it, yeah.
Like, Captain Nemo's got a fucking submarine and a car. And he doesn't even have, like, a vintage car. He has, like, a fucking 60s Cadillac.
Yeah.
And a submarine that is solar-powered.
Mm.
And, you know, a solar power that charges up in an instant, just has the surface and it's powered up. So he has better solar power than we have now. He had then. So how is somebody inventing the fucking tank? How has he won the arms race?
He wears a mask. It's all about branding. Yeah, he's mysterious. Okay. Yeah. He should be called Elon Phantom. That doesn't work. Because Nemo's got like little underwater submersibles as well. With like jellyfish.
He's got everything.
Yeah, a little bit. Really
and
cool.
So, but I've invented the tank and armored plating.
Yeah, which is essentially just a bit of metal that I'm wearing. So the Phantom apparently is going to start a world war by bombing a secret meeting of world leaders in Venice, and then. Hey, we meet the comic relief of the film, Rodney Skinner, who's a nude man, but invisible.
Yeah.
I fucking hate him so much.
Now, what else is this guy in?
Oh, he's been in all sorts. I think he's a Scottish actor. I think he was in Blade 2.
Okay. Because he's only... They kind of gave up halfway through with the whole special effect on him.
Yeah.
Because sometimes he has a little bit of makeup on, just enough that you can see him.
Yeah.
And that's obviously had to be CGI'd. And then other times he just go, let's just say that he put makeup all over himself.
Yes.
And
every
and
part
he's
of
just
his head.
White. Every part of his head. Even though there was no need for him to do that.
No.
But he's really gone all in and made sure to absolutely cover every inch of his head with makeup.
I don't mind the actor. The actor's fine. It's just the part. It's so shit. He's so annoyingly cheeky and cockney.
Mm.
I hate it.
And ass grabby,
yeah. He's a total fucking sex pest.
Yeah.
All invisible men are, have you noticed? Every Invisible Man film's got a bit where he's like, oh, I'm going to go and grab a pair of tits. I don't know if that's what he invented it for.
I think it's supposed to imply, you know, what would you do if you had this power? And you've got to at least accept the fact that there are going to be it's a 12 certificate, and there are going to be 12 and 13 year old boys watching this, and the first thing going to be thinking is, why didn't he go and grab some boobs?
True.
They'll see it as a plot hole if you don't include
That's very true. Yeah, you're right. Plus, if I was doing an Invisible Man in a film, I know it's been done to death, but you got to go with the bandages and goggles. It's a classic look.
Mm.
It's shorthand for Invisible Man.
I also think, with the Invisible Man in this film, that... Because CGI is so good, it just wouldn't matter. At the time, there was just scene after scene of, oh, look, isn't it amazing? The bomb seems to be floating. Mm. The knife is moving in midair. How are they doing this? It seems to be, it's all about that. Whereas now it just looks like bad CGI.
Yeah. Yeah, which it always will. But then Mina Harker arrives and Alan Quatermain is livid that she's a woman. Livid. I was expecting your husband.
Yeah.
What you going to be?
I think that was Sean Connery just letting himself go. That was, this is really going to, I really don't need to act at all here.
No. In fact, none of that was written down. He just said it.
Now, what's her name? What that actress...
Oh, I did write that down. Hang on. I did write it down. Petter Wilson.
Yeah, I like her. I have, again, I don't think I've seen her in anything else, but I liked her in this and I thought, why haven't I seen her in more things? And then every time I see a woman, particularly a good-looking woman in something and I like her in something and I go, why haven't I seen her in more things? I just go, oh, she had a horrible time, didn't she?
Mm.
Your time is like, I don't want to look into it, because it is. It's like anybody you look at from 20 years ago and then they just sort of quietly disappear is because they didn't play ball with some creepy producer.
Yeah, most probably. I did read that because Connery got like, how much did he get paid for this? I think it was like 17 million or something. So it meant that everybody they had to hire to round out the cast had to be quite cheap.
Yeah. I'm glad that didn't even occur to me, because it did seem like, it also seemed like this was a great opportunity for a lot of people. It seemed like this was supposed to be a star-making, you know, vehicle. You know, you get to play this iconic character of Tom Sawyer as a gunslinger. I'm sorry that I keep coming back to that.
Well, we're really building up. I think it's worth it. It's worth it.
And yet nobody sort of went on to anything much of note after this film. It didn't catapult anybody into stardom. The guy who plays Tom Sawyer, I think he won like best breakthrough performance for this film at like the MTV Movie Awards or something. But he then went on to be in ER, where they totally... Did you watch ER?
Not much, no.
I mean, ER obviously was the show that made a star of George Clooney.
Yes.
But when you look back at early ER, like, they decided this guy is going to be a star. George Clooney is going to... Because, like, George Clooney's character, you know, obviously they couldn't write him as anything other than handsome. But a womanizer and a drink, but a pediatrician who cares so much about the children. Mm. So much. And, you know, gets into a fight with somebody because they're beating a kid very early on. It's like he just... This is a character you fall in love with.
Sure.
And then... Yeah, obviously he left, and then they obviously decided they needed the next George Clooney, and so this dude, what's his name?
Oh, I couldn't even tell you now.
I'm going to call him Tom Sawyer.
Yeah, Tom Sawyer.
Shane West. They bring in Shane West as this rock and roll doctor who shows up hungover because he's been partying all night.
Oh,
but he's also an amazing doctor. Obviously, he's an amazing doctor, but he's constantly rubbing his eyes because he's tired. Mm. And he gets a great moment like two episodes in where he's at a party because he's young. Mm. He's basically Dougie Houser, right? Mm. But old enough to fuck.
Right.
And he's at a party and a balcony collapses and he saves everybody.
Oh, wow.
And then later in another episode, he's in a band and he's on stage rocking out. And at one point, he even arrives to the hospital on a skateboard, hanging onto the back of an ambulance.
Oh, my God.
They fucking threw everything at his character to make him a star.
Yeah.
And what else has he been in?
Nothing.
None.
Nothing at all. No. I had it in my mind that he was like somebody I'd recognise from something else, and I looked at his IMDb and I was like, nope, no, not seen him in a thing.
No.
Even the director called it quits after this.
Well, good. Yeah. I mean, the director retired Sean Connery, so he deserves to slink off back into obscurity.
But he'd done Predator 2. He'd done Nightmare on Elm Street 5. he was top Predator, of his game.
Predator 2 was okay. I'm not even getting a... Okay.
No, I agree. I quite like bits of it, but it's not amazing, no.
No, it's not.
It's got some nice bits in it. The subway bit's good.
You don't even remember it, do you? No, I do remember the subway bit. Yeah, because he holds her up and then she's pregnant, so that's why he doesn't kill her.
There you go, see? Stephen Norrington done that.
Yeah. No, I do remember it. I think the thing with a lot of franchise movies, they don't hire amazing directors. They hire directors they can boss around.
Yeah.
Like that's the classic thing. And then if things go wrong, they're not good enough to try and hold things together. But they tend to with franchise movies, it tends to be very producer led.
Yeah.
And so they deliberately hire directors who don't have a great vision so that they can sort of, you know, push them around.
Well, yeah, because Predator 2 would be Joel Silver, so that's exactly who you're talking about. A very bossy, shouty man. anyway, Captain Nemo has an automobile, as you say, which is basically a fucking hot rod.
Yeah.
And he tells, and so they get in the car together, Quartermain tells Mina Harker that women are distraction on missions.
I mean, he's got a point.
Yeah. Yeah. So they go to the Docklands to recruit Dorian Gray. Why? Why would you want Dorian Gray? Have I missed something? Is he good at anything?
Well, apparently he's immortal.
Yeah, that's it.
It's not just that he doesn't age. I mean, it was an aspect of his character that we hadn't considered, is that he can also be riddled with bullets, and they'll go into the painting and not him. But even... You know, he can be riddled with bullets and somebody can rip off his shirt to show the bullet holes. Mm. And yet in the very next scene, his shirt and waistcoat are fixed again.
Yeah. It's such a bad character. And also Stuart Townsend, I think, another one who hasn't gone on to do anything. He was originally what's his name? I've forgotten his name now. In Lord of the Rings, the man with the sword. I know that doesn't...
Oh, that's quite a lot of them, isn't
Legolas?
No. Legolas is the one with the bow and arrow. Yeah. That was...
Viggo Mortensen, essentially. Him.
Okay, him. He Aragorn?
Aragorn, there you go. He was originally Aragorn, but he got fired because they just thought he was too bad. So they got Mortensen last minute.
I mean, I feel like I need to defend Stuart Townsend just because he's Irish.
Okay, go on.
And was no, that's it. I just feel like I need to defend him. And he was married to Charlize Theron for quite some time.
Oh yes, he was, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And every morning he woke up and was just like, I can't believe my luck.
Yeah, I said, you know what? I think I can just retire.
Yeah, I'm still getting film roles, and I'm married to Charlize Theron. What's happening? I'm rubbish. to be fair, in his defence, I will, because you know my family's partly Irish, so I will leap to his defence partly. It's not his fault. It's a terrible, terrible role. And he's clearly been told to play it like a really posh dickhead all the way through. And it's very annoying.
Just sort of ham it up and just be a bit oily and suave. And he is very handsome. He's a very handsome man. And I think it's just basically it's playing Dorian Gray in this. Your job is just to be handsome. But the other, okay, and I'm slightly jumping ahead, but looking at the Dorian Gray character, because towards the end, him and Harker have a fight. And he's amazing at fighting, as is everyone in the film. Everyone's amazing at fighting. But if you were immortal, if bullets bounced off you because you had a painting, why would you bother your arse learning kung fu?
Exactly.
You're immortal. You don't need to learn how to fight. It's not even like the immortals in Highlander who have to fight each other. But this is, you're immortal.
Just have a fucking hammer. That's all you need.
You don't even need that, I would have thought. Just make sure you don't get trapped in a box somewhere.
Yeah.
If I was immortal, I would learn nothing other than recipes for unhealthy food that I could gorge on.
You'd basically be forever retired, wouldn't you? Just have a lovely time. Yeah. The wicker basket making.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
So Mina's former lover apparently is Dorian Gray. So Quatermain, apparently he tells everybody he was saved by a witch doctor. And he says, they say to him, so Gray, what are you doing here? What do you want for us? And I'm thinking, good question. And he says, experience. And then he goes, me and Alan knew each other at university. And they were like, oh, so Alan taught you. And I was like, no, he taught
the way around.
Me.
You see, he's been around a while, eh?
When I first met him, I was a boy. Yeah, yeah, amazing. So then, as they're chatting...
And they're all amazed. Even the vampire is amazed.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You know that he's immortal, and you're immortal as well. Why do you look so surprised?
That's right, yeah. She should be like, okay, that figures, yeah. But they're in a room that seems like it's principally designed so people can come up to the upstairs bit and shoot down at them. Mm-hmm. Which is what happens. The Phantom and his lads turn up.
Yep.
And then... The man of the movie, the hero that saves the day, Tom Sawyer, arrives with his dueling pistols, mm-hmm. shooting up. Now, he wasn't in the original comic.
Oh, that annoys me even more then.
Yeah, so they brought him in for this Americans.
This isn't even Alan Moore's fault.
No. Apparently, in the original comic, it was Fu Manchu.
Okay, fair enough then.
But I've drawn up a list of who they could have had instead of Tom Sawyer. So, King Dong... Arnold from Different Strokes.
Would he have been out of copyright by then?
Yeah, it'd be five. Yeah, Rod Hull. I think he'd be good with his emu. And a guy called Arthur Werewolf, because he's half man, half werewolf.
Oh, Eric the Half a Bee.
There you go. Yeah, that'd be out of copyright by then. And John Cleese wouldn't mind. He's not litigious or anything, is he?
Yeah,
that'd be fine. Yeah, so we get Tom Sawyer and he shoots up the place and he's really good at gunfighting. He's got a big cowboy hat type thing going on.
Mm. Well, really what Tom Sawyer is like was supposed to have been good at was like convincing somebody else to go and shoot the guns on his behalf. Like
yeah.
That's supposed to be his skill, isn't it?
Yeah,
and tricking people into doing other things for him.
An apple theft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's not, as far as I know. Because when I was a kid, I used to watch, was it The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn
Huckleberry
and Tom Sawyer?
Yeah.
I don't remember him having jewelry pistols and shooting people.
No, that wasn't a thing. I mean, it could have been Billy the fucking Kid.
Yeah.
It could have been an actual gunslinger, right?
Oh, you've solved it. Yeah, it could have been Billy the Kid. That's a much better idea.
I guess, was he a real person, maybe? Was that the issue with that?
Maybe they had to be, I don't know. Robin Hood. Could it be Robin Hood?
For the Americans.
Yeah, American Robin Hood. Kevin Costner. We ride with my father to Nottingham.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically, the Phantom and his assassins turn up, but they're really shit, and they all get killed immediately, and the Phantom runs off. And I've written here, the Phantom looks like someone who might have won Bullseye at one point. So he's got long, scraggly mullet and weird eyes. So Gray and Sawyer join the League. And they meet the Nautilus, which is the submarine you mentioned earlier, which is the size of the Titanic, at least. Mm-hmm.
And turns out to be solar powered.
Yes. Yeah.
Quite the technology.
So then they go to Paris to recruit Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
I think the effects for Mr. Hyde stand up a little bit.
They're not bad.
Yeah.
I think for the time, I think they were probably, they were the star of the show 20 years ago. Jason Fleming, he would have done Snatch and Lock, Stock would have happened at this point, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's probably his first big movie.
And this is like, this is me now getting catapulted into the big time. Fuck you, Vinnie Jones.
Yeah.
It's my day.
And he spends the next 20 years just playing parts like this.
Yeah,
it's good for him though. I noticed when he's Hyde, he looks like Lawrence Fox. I don't know if that's anything. But he says, he's running around the rooftops and then they're luring him into a trap. And they eventually get him into a net and he gets brought onto the Nautilus. And then we see his potion wear off because he agrees to help them. But when his potion wears off, I think it looks really cool. It's like kind of like Victorian like sample jars full of deformed babies and things like that. Do you know what I mean? It's like, or Elephant Man type things. He's just gradually...
You mean as he's changing back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it like is. It's a fairly horrific effect as he's changing back, yeah.
And then as they're talking to him, Sean Connery gets goosed, I think, by the Invisible Man. And then he throws him out of the room and says, Skinner, I want you dressed all the time or I'll put my boot up your arse.
Yeah, that seemed a very just pointless extra scene thrown in there.
It's probably a bit of comedy.
I feel like if you've only got Sean Connery for so many hours a day and he's clearly not playing ball, maybe save him for the scene where you want the emotional moment between him and Tom Sawyer talking about his dead kid rather than a not funny scene where he gets fucking goosed by the Invisible Man.
Do you think they had to CG there's some scenes where Sean's still in his golf stuff and they have to CG his costume back onto him? Turn that club into a rifle. So then we get the scene you're talking about where him and Tom go out onto the deck of a boat and he tells them that on his last job, and the reason he stepped away from the Empire is on his last job he took his son and he died in his arms.
I mean, maybe just bear in mind that it wasn't bring your kid to work day.
Exactly, yeah.
In the British government. I mean, I think he knew that the job he was off to do was a bit dangerous.
Mm.
And you know, the reason he was being asked to do it is because he can't die and he chose to bring his perfectly mortal son along with him. I really think it's very unfair of him to blame the British government. I think it's a bit unfair. In the same way as it's unfair of Sean Connery to step away from all filmmaking just because one director was a dick, you know.
Yeah. But I think this is an instance. I'm not really like a huge fan of flashbacks, but I think this scene probably needs one because we know literally nothing about his son. We don't know why he was there. What if he was 9, if he was 30, we have no idea. Could have been a fetus. He could have died of a heart attack. We have no idea.
And where was the boy's mother through all of this?
That's right. Getting in the way. Can't put another distraction. He could have been in a little pushchair, got hit by a Victorian cart. We don't know. But as you say, when Tom's like, very insensitively as well, by the way, I might add, he teaches Tom how to shoot from a long range. Mm-hmm. And then Tom's like, oh, did you used to teach your son this? Like, don't bring that up. He's sad. Why would you bring that up?
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been nice to just have a little, oh God, why am I always saying things like that to people?
Yeah, fucking hell. That time I offered Christopher Reeve a foot race. Mm. Oh.
Tell you what, Fu Manchu wouldn't have said something like that.
He'd have laughed at your dead son. Yeah, and as you say, he disappears completely and then we get the shot of a door shutting.
Yeah.
So then Dorian explains to Mina about how the portrait ages instead of him. Then they mm-hmm. snog. And then he offers her a glass and the glass breaks and you get a bit of her blood. And he's like, oh, sorry, how clumsy of me. So then they go to Venice in Nemo's submarine and they realise that they find some like camera. Well, they don't know what it is at first, like some powder. And then Jekyll finds that one of his formulas is missing as well.
Yes.
So they blame this all on the Invisible Man.
Because they think he's... And I guess that's why they set up the Invisible Man as a prankster.
Mm.
With that scene with Sean Connery. But again, you could have set him up as a prankster with somebody else who is a bit more willing to be in the film.
Who would have been better in that part, by the way, if you want to set it up as a prankster immediately instead of the Invisible Man? Mr. Blobby.
Yeah.
He'd have been amazing. He just run...
They should have given them... They should have given him a catchphrase like "Invisi, Visi, Wizzy."
Yeah, more memorable. I also read that because they weren't allowed to use the phrase "the Invisible Man" because it's owned by Universal, so
okay,
they had to say
call
it an Invisible Man, which just feels a bit pedantic.
I am Skinner, the man you cannot see,
or the Hollow Man,
yeah.
Like Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, yeah.
See his knob for a bit. I've written down here a line Sean Connery thought he'd never actually have to say when they're driving along in Venice and all the soldiers come out and Mina says, leave these men to me, and turns into 30 bats. He says, the vampire lady has us covered.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to let us know that. But they're shooting down at them.
Hmm.
Through, even the vampires, like, how is a load of bats supposed to shield you from gunfire?
No, I don't know. And she's like, just... She seems to be hungry at the right times. Like, she'll feast on someone in front of them all and then feast on another guy here. Surely at one point when they're on that boat, she would have been thinking, I'm a bit thirsty. Can I eat one of your crew, Mr. Nemo? Like, one who's got a limp or something.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's a bit like being a wine taster. Maybe it's not that she's that hungry. Maybe she can just spit it out when she doesn't really... feel like it.
That's a good idea. Yeah, that's, I'll go with that. So Sawyer drives Nemo's car like he's fucking Nicky Lauda or something. He's just like immediately knows how to drive it and is going high speeds all around Venice.
Mm. See, this is going back to what I was saying about a star making role. They've given him this guy, this new actor, and they said, oh, let's also make him able to do this. Let's just throw everything at him and turn this guy into a star.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work.
So then
TV said, give us a go. And they went, oh, no, we haven't been able to do it either.
No, we need someone to step in the shoes of George Clooney. It's not this guy, guys. They've decided that, because the buildings are collapsing like dominoes, really, really horrible looking CG dominoes, they decide to, the best thing to do is blow up a building in front of it to cease the dominoes.
Yes.
So Sawyer's got to race to that spot and fire a flare.
Now, was this, have we already had the point where they're listening to a recording? No, we haven't. Sorry.
No, we haven't got that yet.
Carry on. Yeah. Because there's so many points at which bombs go off and blow up buildings that I'm just confused as to which
one. It's so monotonous. But while Sawyer's doing this, Quatermain notices the Phantom loading stuff onto a boat. So he jumps off and confronts him, and they have a little graveyard scuffle, and then we find out that the Phantom is M. Why?
And why, seeing as he wears a mask, does he also have makeup to make him look like his face is all burnt?
I don't know.
Why doesn't he just wear a mask or just do the makeup to make your face all burnt? I don't...
Yeah.
It's a real belt and braces move, particularly considering he gets one knocked off and he just takes the other off as well.
Yeah. He's like, it was me all along. And Quatermain's like, you. I'd be like, why? Why have you done this? You recruited us.
Yes.
I don't understand.
You could have just had your plan and just carried it out.
Yeah, why have you recruited
people because
to
he wanted
stop you?
He wanted to get them together so he could then use their powers.
Which he could have got, like, he could have taken a bit of Quatermain from the club. He could have got some of Mina's blood from somewhere else. He doesn't need to do all this.
He could have gotten them together without telling them what his overall plan was, I suppose, couldn't he?
Party. It could have been a party. Surprise! It's M's birthday. I don't know who he is. It's his birthday. Have some tea, and then they're all drugged, and then take a bit of them. That's why.
Again, he could have just kidnapped Captain Nemo and got him to give him all his secrets.
Yeah, yeah.
Because as I say, Nemo has the arms race dead cold. He has the good shit. Mm. All he needed really, if his idea was to, you know, to have the most advanced weaponry in the world, Nemo's. He could have just been the league of Captain Nemo.
Yeah, and plus Nemo's a sailor. All you need to do is get him drunk and laid, and he'd have done what you wanted. So, we then find out that Dorian is also a traitor.
Mm-hmm. Just can't trust him, can you?
No, especially not when he was in Birds of a Feather. So he murders Ishmael because he goes, call me Ishmael. And it's like he's looking at the camera and going, and you can as well if you like, because it's it's a reference from another book. That should have been the other extraordinary gentleman. Moby Dick could have come up at the end and saved them.
But yeah, they could have given Ishmael a couple more lines like, oh, this is like my white whale.
Yeah, exactly. That would have been great.
Has anyone seen my dick?
I'm just going to enjoy this.
That could have been an Invisible Man moment as well.
Perfect. I'm going to enjoy this nice cup of Starbucks. I think he was in Moby Dick. I don't know. So Dorian, this is when they play the record now. They're like, we found this record, sir.
Mm.
And they play it, and then they do this cute little thing where they pretend like we're watching a silent film, even though they're talking. But really, they're just listening to the record. And it's M going, ha ha, there never was a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. All those paintings I had in my office picturing old League of Extraordinary Gentlemen I had commissioned just today because it was never a thing. Like, what is wrong with you?
This is very elaborate. You've wasted too much time.
It doesn't make any sense. And then he says, we've collected all of bits of you. And then you see little sort of early 2000s slow, fast zoom-ins of things happening.
Mm-hmm. And the broken glass thing that Dorian Gray and Harker was just to get a bit of her blood so they could then make vampires.
The powder, you're sitting there thinking, oh, what could that be? Some sort of magic. No, it was Dorian Gray taking a photo of Captain Nemo's setup. Could have done a drawing. I mean, fucking hell. But meanwhile, while this is all going on, Dr. Jekyll is... There's a nice little thing they do where he looks in a mirror and he sees Hyde. I quite like that.
Yeah.
I'll give it points for that. But he's looking in the mirror and Hyde's going, it hurts my ears.
Yes, because as well as the recording telling them their plan and letting them know what they've done in that James Bond style of you must know my plan.
Yeah.
They say, and as well as while you listen to this, we've actually been playing a subsonic frequency that's a trigger for the bombs that are all over the building.
Yeah.
And then they cut to the bombs. Here's, I know, in a film of loads of stupid shit, it is ridiculous for me to focus on this, but the bombs are all ticking.
Yeah.
Now, why are they ticking if they're being set off by a subsonic frequency?
Yeah.
They don't need timers. They don't need to tick. It's just like they just go, it's a bomb, so it has to tick. It's a bomb in a film. You don't. It doesn't need to tick.
No.
It doesn't need a timer. If it's ticking, it's only going to alert people to the presence of the bomb if they hear it ticking. If you're using a different kind of trigger to set it off, it doesn't need to tick.
And there are also giant suitcases with the clocks on top.
Yeah,
because someone would see that and be like, that's a bomb.
Yeah. Because it would just be, they didn't want to have just a great big bowling ball candle type bomb.
We also get my favourite line where M says, and to that end, I sent my wolf among you sheep. And Stuart Townsend looks at the screen and goes, growl. Fuck off. Fuck off and die. So the submarine all blows up and Dorian Gray gets in an escape pod that's shaped like a jellyfish and escapes. So then they have to go to Mongolia because they've received a message from Rodney Skinner, an invisible man, telling them that he snuck aboard the jellyfish without them knowing.
A legally distinct invisible man.
Yes. Yes. The artist formerly known as an invisible man. He sent them like a telegram message saying that they were going to Mongolia and it's a big factory. When they get there, they're all dressed in snow gear, obviously thinking of the action figures that are going to be out. And Quatermain takes a moment to sit with his rifle and is visited by an Indian tiger that's been made to look white by CG.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a Siberian tiger, is it?
Siberian tiger. And he looks at it and it looks at him, and we're supposed to think about, you know, two... Because he literally says a creature that's used to hunting is now retiring or something.
Mm.
It's supposed to be a poignant moment, but it just looks a bit shit.
Yeah, and then the tiger goes up, and then Harker and Nemo come out. We heard a noise. Really? Because nothing happened.
It didn't make a noise.
It didn't. Not much. And not enough to start that what? Everything else you've seen in the film, you just heard, oh, what's that? That sounds like footprints.
It'd be good
I've got up to have a push.
Yeah.
Do you mind?
From Alan's point of view, he's sitting there calm, serenely looking at it. But from their point of view, he's sitting there screaming in terror.
Yeah.
But the tiger recognises game and turns away and walks back off into the wilderness.
And Nemo just pieces it all together by the look on Sean Connery's face, because that's how good an actor Sean Connery is.
Yeah.
Oh, perhaps did a tiger come up and decide not to eat you? Yes, perhaps.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Spooky.
So then the invisible man gooses Mina. Hey!
Yeah, fucking just goosing a vampire.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
I don't know. I wouldn't even shed a tear if he died in like a horrific accident.
Yeah, I wouldn't. If he was burnt alive, it would be too good for him.
Yeah. But he says, well, I've been in the factory and it's full of tanks and robot men and flamethrowers, all sorts of weapons. So we have to get in and stop it. And also
he just goes, yeah, have you seen Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
It's a bit like that, but more steampunk.
You're right. Exactly that shot, isn't it? so then Quatermain, they decide to split up. So Quatermain and Sawyer are going to go and confront M.
He says, everybody, split up. We'll edit our individual fight scenes together in the finale.
And they'll be so incredibly boring that you won't care. Even though there's a big CG ball man, it doesn't matter.
You rescue him at the last minute. You rescue her at the last minute. You come up behind me at the last minute.
What I love here is when they confront M, they say, or should I say, Professor James Moriarty. Which just makes me think of Vic and Bob with the, it's Tooey. Or should I say, Dr. Nemesis. But he says, James, he's suddenly a Cockney now, which makes no sense. He goes, James Moriarty, the so-called Napoleon of crime. But I would all like to write our own reviews, mate.
that's for other people to give you that title.
You're not Dave Lee Travis. The hairy cornflake. Who calls you that? So he's...
It reminds me of when I was 12 and I tried to get the nickname Wizard going. It just didn't happen.
That's a great nickname. Maybe you should start calling yourself that now.
I have one friend, the comedian David Haddingham, calls me Eddie Wizard just because of that.
I think you should start calling yourself Ed Wizard Byrne.
Yeah. The Wizard of Comedy. There I don't you know. Go. People might be expecting magic if I do that.
No.
And you know the saddest thing about it? The reason I wanted to be called Wizard is because there was a guy in an episode of TJ Hooker and his nickname was Wizard. And I went, that is a cool nickname.
It is a great nickname.
Yeah.
I'm going to be called Tom Sawyer from now on.
Well, that's the thing. All through this film, I just kept singing the Rush song in my head.
I just kept thinking, why the fuck? It's just such a bizarre choice.
And I'm glad I didn't know. That he wasn't even in the book, because I think it would have annoyed me all the more. Yeah. I'm all the way through it, I'm just thinking, oh, Alan Moore, you mad bastard. Fair enough. But no, he didn't do it.
That's no wonder he looked at every script at this point. It was just like, no, I fucking hate it. Take me name off it right now. Was there any he liked?
Well, his name is on this. It does say based on the book by, but what also surprised me, knowing the history of it, that Sean Connery's an exec producer on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I was surprised by that.
So did he not have the power to get the director booted? Clearly not.
Clearly not. Oh, bloody hell. Bizarre choice. If you're playing M as a posh person, Phantom with a sort of European voice, then you're revealed to be Professor Moriarty and you decide, I'll play him as a Cockney.
I'll play him as a Cockney,
That makes no sense.
And that actor is Australian, isn't he?
Yeah, Richard Roxburgh.
Yeah. I've seen him in a lot of things, and I do like him as a bad guy. Mm. You know, I particularly enjoyed him in Mission Impossible 2.
That's right, yeah.
Where he's South African. So, you know, he can do accents, but just I wondered, did it come from him? Sean Dermot's Cockney. Yeah. And they were all like, oh, do you know what? I'm so fucking tired.
Yeah,
me and Sean Connery, I have no fight left in me. Fuck it. Do it as a Cockney. I don't give a shit.
He also played Sherlock Holmes, so he's done both. Not many actors have played Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty.
What was he Holmes in?
The BBC did Hound of the Baskervilles about 23, 4 years ago, and he was Holmes, and Ian Hart was Watson.
Okay.
It was quite good. Yeah, not that good.
But it does seem a ridiculous idea to get the bad guy from a book and not that the hero isn't in.
Yes, that's right. There. Again, like, was this a copyright thing? Sherlock Holmes still in copyright at this point? I don't know.
It must have been, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as you say, if the BBC had just done it 3 years before.
Yeah, there you go. So then Skinner sets explosive charges, and then Mina has a battle with Dorian where she initially gets killed, and he says, I wanted to nail you one more time. Shame it was literally or something.
Yeah, that's what he said. That's exactly what he said. It's a piss poor line. But she at that point has spotted the painting that he's just left sitting there that he totally should have hidden.
He should. She pins him to the wall and then shows it to him. And you get... It's like the director said, I want the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, but done on a really bad computer. And he basically melts and becomes a skeleton.
Yeah.
And the portrait becomes a perfect picture of him.
Yeah. Now, I don't remember that being a thing.
No.
For Dorian Gray. That all you have to do is show him the picture. I thought you would just destroy the picture and then he would...
No. But he did have six shooters and a sword and he windsurfed because he was cool. I don't know about any of that.
You're thinking of Tom Sawyer.
I am thinking of Tom Sawyer. Yeah. Was it Tom Sawyer in Huckleberry Finn where the intro was them on a raft just going down the river with the jaunty music?
I think so.
Yeah, that's not in this, is it?
Huckleberry Finn's not even in
it. There you go. The Phantom should have taken off his mask. Should have been Huckleberry Finn. What a twist that would have been.
Huckleberry Moriarty.
Or should I say Robin Hood?
Should I say the Green Goblin? The Mekon?
Oh, So Dorian Gray's dead. Nemo and Hyde...
And not a moment too soon.
Thank God. Thank God. Hated him. Nemo and Hyde rescue... I wish it had been some disease or something rather than that. Nemo and Hyde rescue the scientists and their families. And then this henchman, Dante, is trying to fight Hyde. And then he just sees a formula in a flask and downs it immediately.
Doesn't just down it. Downs it and then pours it into his eyes and over his face he's trying to cool himself down. Like, it's like a very odd thing to do with an untested, untried formula.
You have no idea what it is. It could be like piss.
I don't get the point getting it in your eyes.
No.
Like, have you ever taken medicine and just thought, I'll just get some in my eyes just for good measure?
Or, you know, the other way around. You never put eye drops to the back of your throat. Be a bit weird. But he turns into a giant pair of balls. Really angry balls.
I am Ballsack Man.
And starts having a fight with Nemo and Hyde. Nemo at one point gets thrown about 40 feet across the room into a brick wall. And then just goes, oh, we'll have to change tactics. It's like, you'd be dead.
Yeah. But like, Nemo is ridiculously indestructible in this film. There's just... his whole character, he's the Captain Marvel of this film in that he's just too powerful for it to make any sense of him even being a member of the team. You just think, this guy could just do it all on his own.
Yeah. Although it would have been much funnier if when he was fighting, just the girl started playing at the end of Captain Marvel, but for no reason, just out of context. So Sawyer and Quartermain go after M, and then Sawyer is taken hostage. And I was thinking, I was watching this, and I was thinking, why is the Invisible Man, is he turncoated? And then it turns out there's two Invisible Men, and one of them's a baddie. So I was like, who the fuck's the other one? So I had to look it up, and it's the guy who comes to recruit him at the beginning in Kenya.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
All right.
I had no idea.
That's not obvious at all, is it?
No. I was thinking, who the fuck's this other Invisible Man? But it's him. So, makes no sense.
That actor must have been really fucked off as well. It was like, I'm actually, I come back in the end of the film, but you don't know it's me.
No. Absolutely livid. So he's about to get killed, Sawyer, by the other invisible man, and Quartermain shoots him, but gets stabbed by Moriarty for his troubles. And then we get a repeat of the beginning where Moriarty runs off and Sawyer aims the rifle.
The student is now the master.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he takes out Moriarty, and all the elements of all the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen that he'd stolen all slip down into the water and sink beyond trace.
Possibility for a sequel.
Definitely. Yeah, there's definitely going to be one.
Well, you know, I mean, if they can make another Avatar film, what, 10, 15 years after the first one? You know, who knows? Maybe the time has come for the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen 2.
The Avatar thing bothers me because I didn't go and see it because it looked shit and I didn't like the first one. But everyone I know who went to see it, I said to them, so what was it like? And everyone to a man went, yeah, it was all right. I'm like, great. It's now one of the biggest movies of all time and everybody's gone, yeah, it was all right. And it came on Disney Plus a couple of weeks ago. Literally no one talked about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
How is this mediocrity allowed to happen?
But the fact that when Avatar came out, it was the biggest film, the biggest box office film of all time. And Endgame, they had to like re-release it, in IMAX and stuff like that, just to get it over the line. To overtake Avatar. And for Avatar to have been that big a film, its cultural footprint is tiny. Like, more people would talk about Firefly than would talk about Avatar.
I think it was just because it was the first big 3D thing.
Yeah, I
when
don't
3D
know.
Came back. fuck it. So Quartermain says to Tom Sawyer, May this new century be yours, son, as the old one was mine.
Yeah. And then Tom Sawyer didn't go, did you wish he said that to your own son? Is that something you would have liked to have said to him, but you didn't because he died in your arms? Oh, man, I'm being so fucking insensitive again. And then a door just shuts and Sean Connery's mysteriously not there anymore.
Fu Manchu's next to him and goes, oh, man, you shouldn't have said that. Where have you been? I've been here all the time. What I did enjoy is that Sean Connery dies at the end. Not, I don't mean it like that. his character dies. But as it zooms out, he's clearly sat down quite comfortably. So he hasn't even had to lie on the floor or anything.
Sean, could we get you to lay down? Fuck off.
Fuck off. So he's buried beside his son in Kenya. And they then go, he was right. He was wrong, you know, because he said he couldn't die in Kenya and now he's dead. So there you go. So Tom Sawyer puts his rifle back on his grave and they all walk off.
I mean, they could have buried the rifle with him. Would have been the more, I don't know, safer thing to do.
Responsible thing to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then a witch doctor's like, oh, and everything goes a bit mental and then it ends. I think we're supposed to think that he's going to come back to life.
I think that's the assumption, yes. They thought, let's leave it open now rather than have it happen in two like we did with Highlander and everyone feels a bit cheated that he just comes back to life in Highlander 2. Let's at least telegraph that now in case we make a sequel.
Yeah, and they never did.
But
there's been talk of a reboot and I imagine it will probably turn up one day as like a piss week TV show, but yeah.
Well, it did. It seemed like it could have been good, and it just seemed like an almost there all the way along. But it just didn't. It felt like the whole thing was made by committee.
Yes,
and then also, the star doesn't want to fucking be there, and that doesn't help either.
No, and it's so obvious as well. As you say, there's whole scenes where you just think he's not actually there, is he? Because I think towards the end, he didn't do any of his pickups or anything. So they had to get stand-ins to be Sean Connery for back of headshots and things.
Yeah.
But at the premiere, the director didn't show up. And they asked Connery, where's the director this evening? And he said, check the local asylum.
But he has straight out said it, you know, because he just, after that, he just didn't give a fuck. He was like, no, didn't like him. And that's why I remember there was a photograph that was in Empire magazine. I'm sure people can find it online of Sean Connery just looking at him. He's obviously being directed by him and the look of total contempt on his face is just palpable.
Yeah. Oh, poor Stephen Dorrington.
There we go. The man we've just been referring to as the director all through this. Poor Alan Smithy.
Well, this was Sean's last film. Well, technically, the last thing he did was an animation called Billy the Vet.
Oh, well, he went out on a high then.
Yeah. He also did that From Russia With Love video game. I don't know if you saw that at the time, where it was a young-looking Sean Connery from Russia With Love, but he'd voiced it. So he sounded like he was really fucking hungover all the way through it. The name's Paul, James Paul. But there you go, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I don't know what else I'm supposed to say now.
No, well, there's nothing else to say, is there? Didn't enjoy it. What would you give it out of 10?
Oh, I'm going to give it 4.
Yeah, solid 4. Well, Ed, thank you.
Because I think to give it 1 would make people want to watch it.
It's true. You know, it's like you say, I've watched so many bad films in my time, which I've returned to because they've got little elements of fun, but this is just a bit of a dirge.
Yeah, and then some films you remember as being bad, but then they're just slightly better. And like, I remember on my stag weekend, I brought along Action Jackson to sort of, you know, we're all going to sit around, we're going to take the piss out of it. But when we started watching it, it was actually, I think it was my little brother who just pointed out, okay, we're just watching a film now. I go, yeah, you're right. Okay, let's turn this off. This is a bit too good to take
Action
the piss
Jackson
out of.
Action Jackson, it has the scene where he jumps over a cab that's trying to run him over. It's one of the greatest moments of cinema.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you chose poorly there. But on that bombshell, Ed Byrne, thank you so much for joining me in 1899.
Thank you. Let's if they do make a sequel, let's meet up again and do that.
Yeah, let's do that. But in the meantime, thank you very much, Ed. And if you want to go and see Ed, he'll be in Edinburgh, or until then, Soho Theatre. So thank you very much, Ed.
Cheers, John.
Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.